Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. You're listening to Career Crossroads, and if you're new here, welcome. Otherwise, welcome back. I'm Jonathan Colleton, and this is the podcast where I talk to one person each week about all the decisions that led them to their current career path, and then I try to figure out some lessons that the rest of us can learn from their journey. Today, I'm talking to Lisa Hilton, who is currently a real estate investor in Los Angeles, California. That, however, is a relatively recent development in her career, so let's listen to her story and find out how she got there. Lisa, welcome to Career Crossroads. How's it going today?
I'm good. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Fantastic. As I can tell from your video and mine, looks like we're both in a bright, sunny days today. Yes. In our respective locations, because you and I are in very different locations. I am Toronto-based, but you are based around Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, yes. And I'm super excited to be on your podcast.
Super excited to have you. You're another one of those great people who, through the power of the internet, I've met online, and we actually met connecting in a podcast group where we were just kind of sharing ideas, and I had you share your career story with me, and I thought, I got to have you on the show. This sounds like exactly what my audience needs to hear, so really excited that you're going to get to share everything today. Now, we always start off on Career Crossroads by talking about what people were like in high school, because I really think that that's where people really begin to make a lot of decisions about what they're going to do after high school. However, I always say to people, if there's any major moments in your life prior to high school that you need to mention that kind of influence what you were like in high school, tell me about that as well. So tell me your story around the time you were in high school.
Yeah, totally. So I am originally from the Cayman Islands. So I was going to high school in the Cayman Islands. And, you know, there was a lot of things going on in high school. I was a very active student in the sense that I liked to, I was involved in sports and teams and stuff like that. So I played netball, and I've remembered scuba diving and all this kind of stuff, sailing as a part of high school physical education programs, and then just studying. But I would say that for me, you know, a good pivotal point was probably when I was around 15. Up until that point, I always thought that I wanted to be a doctor. And I was just really like that's sort of what I was sort of aiming towards. And it was around that time I got an internship. I sought out an internship at the local hospital in the Cayman Islands. And they would allow students to come in for 4 or 5 weeks to work in any of the different departments. So I asked to work in pediatrics. And they were like, yeah, this is really popular, but you can't spend your full 5 weeks here. You can do 3 weeks here, but you have to pick another department to work for the remaining weeks. And I go, okay, great. What are the other options? And then they showed me all the different options. And I decided to choose accounting and finance as the second one, just as a whim. And I then went to do the internship. Pediatrics was first. And I noticed that every time the nurses would come to draw blood, I would always just feel really queasy and not very good. And then it became oh, you know what? I realized that blood is just not, I just don't do well with blood. And then from there, you know, so that sort of ruled things out for me in terms of the medicine area. And then right after that, I ended up going to the second department, which was accounting and finance. And I was like, oh, you know what? I think I like this. This seems interesting. That's how I got my first introduction to it. I wasn't sold that accounting and finance was what I was going to do, but it was the first introduction to this is what it's all about. And then I went back to school. So I'll pause there.
Sure. Yeah. That's a pretty dramatic shift, right? And I guess I was actually surprised when you said that was even kind of an option, because I guess in my head, if you're going to intern at a hospital, you'd think it would be for purely medical purposes. But of course, a hospital, like any other business, has human resources and finance and facilities staff. And so they do need people in all these other roles. But I have to imagine how big of a mental shift that's got to be for you, knowing that you have this goal of being a doctor, and all of a sudden, one of the main things that you're going to have to contend with, blood, is a bit of an issue. And so you end up doing this internship there that's for something not even medicine specific.
That's right.
It's finance like finance would be anywhere else. It's just in a hospital.
That's
so
right.
That's got to be a pretty major shift to kind of mentally go through if you were really feeling like being a doctor. And my question from that is, was there any specific thing that led you towards wanting to be a doctor? Was it like something you saw on TV or a movie you saw or a family friend or something like that? Or yeah. What really was driving you towards that?
You know, that's a good question. When I think about it, you know, I don't think like, I can't say that my parents told me to be a doctor, but I do remember like just conversations when I was younger as a child that like, oh, like these are some good careers, like, or these are some good jobs that you would want to go after. Like you want to be a doctor or you want to be a lawyer or something like that.
An engineer. So, yeah. Yes. A lot of, it comes up a lot with people I talk to that parents are such a major influence early on in particular, right? About the decisions that you make. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that everybody's life is sort of planned out to an extent up until the end of whatever the high school equivalent is of whatever country they're raised in. And after that is when you really have to start making decisions. So at that point, parents are so sort of pivotal in what you know, because they are the ones who have influenced you the most. So you had this finance accounting experience, and you mentioned that you said you'll pause there. So I think if you were to continue, there's more headed in that direction.
That's right.
So tell me where you went next.
So then I went back to school. I had one more year left. And in the Cayman Islands, in the school that I was going to, which was a British school. So you essentially have subjects. And one of my subjects was business studies, hence the finance and accounting. But then I also had sciences as well. So I then went back to school and finished up. And I feel that that internship and that experience sort of helped me to get like really focused, because I came back to school and like really studied to, you know, sort of finish up my classes and be able to, you know, pass and get good subjects. But connected to that, once again, in the Cayman Islands, they have like, at that time, they had like a book of scholarships that you could go through and like apply to the different companies for scholarships to go to the college, go to school both locally in the Cayman Islands as well as abroad. And then that's where I was looking for scholarships to go to school for business, not necessarily accounting, but for business. And it just so happened that I was applying to all these different companies, and one of the companies that responded to me was PricewaterhouseCoopers, and they are an accounting firm. Mm-hmm. And they then ultimately, they ended up issuing me a scholarship, and they said, the terms of our scholarship of accepting this money is that you're going to study accounting. And I was like, ah, okay. And I knew that going in, and I was like open to the idea, because I was like, you know what, I think accounting would be good. And that's how my career in accounting began. I took that scholarship, went to the community college in the Cayman Islands, did 2 years, and then transferred to the University of Georgia. And spent 3 years there finishing up my undergrad degree. And when I got to UGA, when I got to the University of Georgia, I realized that that school, you had to apply to the business school. And this was my next challenge, because initially I didn't get accepted to the business school. And once that happened, I was like, oh my God, this is like terrible, because like, I know that I'm getting this scholarship money to study accounting. So like, I can't like change my major to something else. So I ended up speaking to people and ended up in front of the dean and saying, pleading my case. And she said, okay, you know, you did well on the accounting portion of the exam, but your SAT portion that they gave wasn't like super strong. So what we're going to do is we're going to allow you to come in and take just the first intermediate class of accounting. And then if you pass with a B, then you'll be in the program. And that's literally how I got in the program.
Yeah. So you definitely had to do some advocating for yourself in order to get into that program. And now one thing I want to ask about there is, it's always so curious to me, the rationale for anyone who is an international student. Like, you could go anywhere in the world, right? Mm-hmm. So I went to university an hour away from my hometown, and now here I am all these years later back in Toronto. But for you, like, how Georgia? How did that happen?
Yeah.
You could go anywhere. So what is the link that got you there?
You know, two things. Number one, the firm PwC said they would only offer scholarship money if I went to an American school. So that was that. Secondly, I'd applied to a couple American schools, but I had also applied to some British schools as well, because I was dating at the time someone, this guy, and he was in the UK. I met him in Cayman, but he ended up moving to the United Kingdom. And I was thinking, I had gotten accepted to schools in the UK, but they got ruled out because I didn't have any funding to go to schools in the UK. And I was getting more funding to go to schools in the US. And then I knew two other people who had actually went to the University of Georgia. One had just finished, I believe, and then another was actually like a schoolmate of mine, and she was actually still there. And they both had really good things to say about their experience. So once I got accepted and I spoke to them, and I was like, okay, yeah, my parents were just like, just go to this school. Don't bother about all these other schools. So yeah.
Okay.
So that's how that ended up happening.
I always love to hear that kind of what the logic is, because there's like relationships, particularly at that point in people's lives, always play such a part. So it's really interesting to hear that, if not was a deciding factor, it was certainly part of the decision you had to make.
Yes.
So you get into this business school after advocating for yourself, right?
Right.
And was that experience challenging because you at first were not in the school? Like, did you feel like you had to kind of catch up in any way? Or was that really something that was already a skill set of yours that you just had to sort of prove because of the scholarship situation?
You know, that is such a great question. It has taken me several years to get to this point in terms of, like, you know, I'm now like 36. So like, I've been an accountant for many years at this point, and I understand accounting and the whole nine yards, but I don't feel like it was something that came easily to me. Mm-hmm. It was definitely challenging. And yes, like the cohort that I started with, like when you start, you typically start with three accounting courses and then a couple others. So I only started with one because I was on this probationary period. So yeah, so after that, I did catch up and pick up the rest of those classes. And it was challenging to go through the entire program, but I did it. And I got through it, and then ultimately got through the CPA exam as well, and, you know, came home and started my career. So, but yes, it has definitely been a challenging road for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing we should probably point out right now for anyone listening, keep sticking around for the rest of the interview, because even though you're still an accountant, that's not where this whole story is going.
That's right.
So there is some major pivots coming, I know. And so one thing I also want to know about, the scholarship you got, was that sort of dependent on you getting an education and then coming back to work for that company? Okay.
That's
so
right.
Like at the end, you were coming home no matter what.
Correct. So at the end, I was coming home, and I needed to maintain certain types of grades in order to keep getting more money to pay for more schooling. So all of that happened. There were a lot of hoops, but I did get through all the different hoops. And then ultimately I came home and I worked in Cayman with the firm for 4 years. And once I started my first year, I found out that you could go abroad to live. And I was like, wow, with the firm. And I was like, I'm totally interested in doing that. How does that happen? And that was a process, more hoops, which I essentially jumped through everything that I needed to jump through in order to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And that happened in 2010. And 2010, if listeners remember, that's like the U.S. was coming out of a deep recession, and there was a person ahead of me in 2009 who was actually trying to go to PwC Toronto. And PwC Toronto was like, no, like, we're just not taking people from other, like, we're just not hiring in people right now. Mm-hmm. So 2010 came, and I was very hesitant. I just didn't think that it was going to happen. And I was scared, and I decided that I was going to reach out, you know, on my own to try and make things happen, which ultimately backfired. But in the end, I ended up going to the right place, because I ended up moving to Boston in 2010 with the firm. And I spent 4 years there working. And those were definitely some very challenging years. I was on some very challenging projects, but I learned a lot from the experience. And then after 4 years of
let's not move on to beyond that yet, because you made some very interesting comments there that I want to dig into.
Sure.
You said that you reached out and it backfired on you. And so that was that to the Toronto office or where?
Great question. So this time I was dating someone who was in New York, and I decided I wanted to move to New York. So I was in conversations with my firm in Cayman to move to New York. And they were not ready to, you know, begin the process. And I was like, well, maybe I'll just transfer instead of like going on a secondment. And I decided to reach out to the HR in New York on my own. And ultimately, about a month or two later, my firm in Cayman was like, oh, we're ready to send you now. So we're going to reach out to New York. And then so then New York was like, hold on, what's going on? Does this girl want to transfer, or does she want to go on? It's called secondment, you know, where one firm sort of sends you to another firm to work for a couple of years. So then that's where both of those things sort of clashed. And then ultimately they were just like, you know what, we don't want to do this. And I was just like, ah. Wow. So the partner who was my partner in Cayman was like, you know what? I think you should go to Toronto. I actually have contacts in Toronto. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, I messed up, so I'm just going to go with the flow. So Toronto it is. And they reached out to Toronto, and it was like March or April, and Toronto hadn't responded. And time went on, and the guy I was seeing, his sister was supposed to have a baby shower in Haiti. And it was the earthquake. It was a year that Haiti had that massive earthquake. So they decided to push the baby shower to later on in the year in Boston, where she lived. So this was now August. And we had reached out to Toronto from like March, April. And they had not responded. So August came, and I said to HR, listen, I cannot reach out to Boston because I already messed up New York. So can you guys, I'm going to Boston for this baby shower. I would like to go to Boston. So can you find out whether Boston will have an interview? And that's how I ended up getting an interview with Toronto and Boston, all in like the same time, both offered. And then that's how I ended up going to Boston.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So first off, if we go back even a little bit before, when you finished university and you went back to Cayman, was there a guaranteed amount of time that you had to stay working for PwC, or you would have to pay back part of that scholarship? Was that a thing?
Yeah, that was a thing too. I think I needed to have done like maybe a year or two, not very long, but like a year or two. Yeah.
Interesting. Now, that doesn't seem long at all, considering it's a multi-year scholarship from the sounds of it. And I mean, if you don't want to get into the numbers, we don't have to, but like, was it a sizable scholarship? Like, is it, because my thought here is that the reason companies would offer this is they want people to have a certain area of expertise, but they needed you to go abroad somewhere to get that. And then they want you to come back and do that for them. Right. So is that how it kind of was?
So how it is really is, and I don't know if Cayman still have this book of scholarships that they had back then, you know, because it's been a couple of years now. But the point is, in Cayman, we are a small country. And one of the ways that the government encourages companies that move there to who make money there and hire you know, people and et cetera. One of the ways they ask them to give back is in the form of scholarships. So helping local Caymanians to go to school so that way they're qualified and can have the opportunity to take some of these jobs that these companies are creating on the island. Because otherwise, they do have to hire expats, you know, people from other countries. Lots of Canadians will go to Cayman. I don't know if they still go now, but like back when this was like 06, lots of Canadians, a lot of British, a lot of South Africans, Indians, they would come into Cayman to work. And typically they'll come and they'll come in at a certain level in the organization and they'll typically work for 2 to 3 years. And then some will stay and then they continue to grow in their career and become partners. And then others will decide that they want to pivot and move on to doing something else. Either they'll stay in Cayman or they'll go home or they'll go to a different jurisdiction altogether. Okay. So that is like, it's not like they are just sort of, like, yes, they're doing it out of the good of their heart too, but like it's a joint effort between the government and companies to provide that additional education and support to Caymanians. It's been awesome. I'm truly grateful for that experience.
Fantastic. So when you decided then to leave and this whole like Boston, New York, Toronto thing, that's kind of chaotic.
Yeah.
I can't believe it took 4 months for you to have to sort of wait to hear back from the Toronto office. But I guess that does show like the state the economy was in at that point.
Yes, the economy
in time
was
too.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I was in university back then and my mother was laid off from her job for a while. I got laid off from my summer job one year. And so, you know, we're solidly middle class. So I know how much other people struggled during that time because just jobs were tough to come by. And so it makes sense in that regard that like they weren't exactly looking elsewhere to find people to employ because there were people around Toronto that needed work as well.
Exactly.
But eventually you did get that interview and you get the Boston interview. And I guess, you know, you mentioned the family member of your partner at the time had a, was it a sister or a cousin?
Yeah, a sister. Yeah.
Sister. And she was going to have the party in Haiti, but instead it's in Boston. Like, is that the sole reason why you just said like Boston, that's where I'm going to apply? Or was there, did she live there? Like, did you have family friends there? Okay.
She lived there. And because, you know, back in March, April, when the earthquake took place, like, you know, Boston wasn't really on my radar. It was like number two because it was close to New York. So number in my choices, like number one was like Boston and then number two and then Toronto. So that's how it was that's sort of how it came into play. I think it was, maybe it was number three. I can't even remember now. It's been so long.
I get it.
But
and
it was around that. It was in my top three.
Yeah. And it, like, no offense to anyone in Boston, it's a top three city, right? Like, it's not like it was totally your second choice and you were devastated to only be in Boston. Boston's amazing. Right. I've been there myself.
Yeah.
Love it as a city.
Awesome
city. It's so cool. All this old history there. And so what's that like to transition from moving from
Cayman
to Boston? And you'd already had the experience of doing that international move for university, but still, I have to imagine it's a different experience when you're now, you know, when you're in university, there's a bunch of people all around you, all your age, and they're all doing the same thing you're doing. They're all there to learn and have a certain experience. But the working world's a different beast. There's people in a 40 plus year age range all working together, and everybody's at a different stage of their life. They've got different priorities.
Right.
So what's that like to move to Boston and start working there?
Yeah, totally. It was challenging, but it was also a really good experience, but it was definitely challenging. So like one, weather, like that's the first thing. Like, come on. Like Cayman is like warm, 80 degrees. And then you go to Boston and Boston has all four seasons. So yeah, it was like, I definitely, by the third year of living in Boston, I knew how to dress, the whole nine yards. But in the beginning, I would arrive somewhere like in like sweat because you just don't know how to like properly, you know, balance how much to wear in the cold. So weather for sure. Culturally, so Boston is like an Irish pub type town, you know, big on sports. So culturally, it was a little bit challenging, but eventually I did find, I like to dance, specifically salsa. And now moving to LA, I dance tango, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
But back then I danced a lot of salsa, and one day I Googled, and the first 2 years, all I did was pretty much work. Just work a lot. And sometime in my, at the end of the 2 years and then at the beginning of my third year, I had gotten promoted. And I also was like, you know what? If my time ended in this city, I would not have seen this city at all. And I think it's time to like sort of balance seeing the city and then also continuing to build my career. And that's when I discovered a salsa place in the Boston area. I would take the train everywhere, and it was in Cambridge, and I would go there and I would dance salsa, and it was just so amazing. And I loved it. And then I was also really into yoga. So I would go to like a yoga studio near my house. So honestly, what Boston taught me was it taught me to like really think about the things that I really like to do and then find community around those things. So if I liked salsa, to go find salsa communities. If I like yoga, the same thing. And then eventually I also met friends. Randomly one day I was on a train and I met a girl, and I always say that she was like the domino effect, because after I met her, I met tons of people, and it totally changed my entire Boston experience from a social point of view of like meeting friends and meeting people. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like, given what you just said there, it sounds like you're very, very career driven. And because, you know, all these moves you were looking at before seem in a lot of ways based off the job and less about the social, like you weren't afraid to go somewhere where you didn't know somebody. It just happened to be that you knew some people in Boston. But even still, you were very driven for those 2 years, it sounds like. And it was career focused, then you got the promotion. And was that sort of a leveling out of sorts, where you felt like, now that I've achieved this, I can relax a little bit and enjoy things a little more? Or am I off on that? I mean, I don't know if you, it doesn't sound like you totally took your foot off the gas or anything like that, but you did say like, if my career here ended tomorrow, I wouldn't have seen anything.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely, once I got to that 2 year point, made that promotion and came to that realization, yeah, definitely. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, I actually took my first break from my job. So this was once I got into my third year, the firm HR said to me, you know, what are your plans? And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, well, do you want to stay in Boston? Do you want to leave? Do you want to make partner here? Do you want to do something else? What do you want to do? And I said, you know, I hadn't really thought that far ahead. Like I had only thought up to this 2 year bit. And so she was like, well, you know, give it some thought. You know, we're trying to figure out our headcount and we want to like be able to provide you with the best kind of experience and stuff. And she was like, you know, a couple questions you can ask yourself is, where does your allegiance lie? Does it lie in the city that you live in or in the industry that you work in? Because if it's the industry, then you could be flexible to going to a different city that could enable you to continue to grow in your industry, which has been financial services. Or if your allegiance lies to living in Boston, then, you know, maybe you want to consider being flexible on your industry. So maybe you're okay with pivoting into, because Big Four, like they have a lot of different industries. So you could go, So you could just pivot into another industry and still keep growing in your career. So I took some time. It took me a little while. I want to say maybe 3 to 6 months to really think about that. And that's when I decided that I wanted to do, number one, I was thinking about moving to San Francisco. Primarily because I had never been there before, but I had just heard about it and it sounded similar to Boston. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe that would be a good fit. So in April, many years ago now. I can't, probably 2014, because that's the year I moved to LA. So 2014, April, I took a trip to San Francisco. And I remember getting on the flight thinking it was going to be 3 hours and then realizing it's 6. But yeah, getting out there and I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. So I actually found a yoga program, a yoga teacher program at this studio out there called Yoga Tree for 1 month. And I would do this yoga teacher training and like live in San Francisco to get a feel for the city to determine whether I'd want to move there.
Yeah. Was the 1 month the amount of time that you were going to take off, or was it more than that?
Just it was going to be that. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Two things I want to dig into about that. One is the line that you said about, I guess it was HR saying like, where's your allegiance? At first I thought that was going in a bad direction. I'm like, oh no. Oh, this is like a slave to the company type of mentality. But no, the idea of like that quote is exactly why I do this podcast. So mm-hmm. people can understand that there are different reasons for everyone, right? Some people mm-hmm. are committed to the city and some are committed to the job or
right.
the
industry.
Industry. That's a better term for it for sure. And so like, that's an amazing line. So thank you for saying that, because mm-hmm. I really think people will resonate with that when they hear that. And the second thing that I find interesting, when you said you decided to take some time off, I really think that's so fascinating to see the difference in everybody's mindset of like what constitutes time off work versus a long vacation. And because I would think of a month as like a long vacation, but mm-hmm. you know, when we were talking about those 2 years where you just like worked and did you take a lot of vacations or mm-hmm. was this? No. So this for you was, and you're nodding along. That's why I'm saying no. Yeah. So people can't see this, but so yeah, vacations weren't a big part of your life. So this 1 month was like a really big lifestyle shift for you.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was.
Now keep going. Yeah. Tell me all about it then.
And luckily, I worked in the Big Four, and the Big Four offers these kinds of sabbaticals where, you don't go to zero in your salary. So you just get a little bit of money for the month that you're off in that particular situation. But as the story goes on, it gets interesting. But yeah, so I did that and the firm didn't have any room in San Francisco. And I ended up, my mom had came out with her husband and we decided to drive down to LA. And I came down to LA. This was in the summer of 2014. This was around July 4th weekend. And I was like, LA, this is not my kind of city. And my mom is like, oh, I love here. I love it. Yeah, if you move here. And I was like, ugh, no, this is not the place. And I remembered calling one of my partners in Boston and telling him, the situation. And he said, well, call this partner in LA. They have needs in LA. And I called him and he said, yeah. And we chatted and he was like, how soon can you start? And I said, September 1st. September 1st, I'll come. And he goes, perfect. So I went back to Boston early July, right after July 4th weekend. Went to see HR and HR was like, yeah, what did you decide? And I said, I'm going to move to LA. And she goes, perfect. Because we need people in LA, we're going to help you move.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, wow.
That's amazing. The best sort of, I want to call it luck, but I also don't think it's luck because you and I were talking before we started recording, and I said to you, like, I'm kind of a believer in, like, if you, and I've said this actually on the podcast before when I've interviewed people, like, tell other people what you want, because if they can help make that a reality, most people are good people, and they will try and do that. So that's awesome that worked out for you.
Yes.
Now, I was actually going to ask about the logistical side of this. Like, did you just have an apartment that you could give up easily in Boston? Did you have to deal with selling property or any of that?
No,
kind of,
thankfully, no. So I was on my lease. My landlord, I just told him the situation and he was like, yeah, no problem. Because, Boston's real estate market had changed drastically since 2010. Yeah. In the sense that by the time I left in 2014, prices for apartments now were much higher.
Your landlord was happy to have you leave.
Of course. Raise the rent. He was like, yeah, no problem. Yeah. You can go. We'll raise this rent and get it up to market. I'll bring a dolly.
Let's get you out of there.
So the firm helped me to move across the country. It was just a really smooth move. No complaints. And I moved to LA. And I remembered moving out here on the plane, and I was just in tears because I was so like scared, because this city was so big. It was the biggest city I'd lived in to date. Cayman tiny, Boston tiny, and you know, it's bigger than Cayman, but it's still smaller than LA for sure. And then, you know, desiring to go live in San Francisco, which was going to be inside of my comfort zone because it's quite close to Boston, and then ending up in LA, which is like totally outside of my comfort zone completely. Mm-hmm. But 6 months in, you know, I was like, wow, this is one of the best decisions that I made. But it took those 6 months for me to sort of get acclimatized and like to find my bearings and to find my feet to then to sort of say, okay, yeah, this is what is going to happen.
I'm so glad that you said that you were scared on the flight over there, because up to this point, I've just, you know, not knowing you, you just sound like this super confident woman who just, you're like, I'll move to New York or Toronto or Boston, whatever. I'll go to university in another country, whatever. I got this. But the reality of career changes for a lot of people are that there's a vulnerability in that. There is like scary new experiences you have to deal with. So I'm really glad that you're kind of willing to share that, because I think there are just some people who won't, you know, I talk about it like, you know, you go look at Instagram and everybody's showing this amazing, perfect version of their life, but nobody talks about how like it was terrifying for them to get to this point, or, you know, not every day is amazing. And so I'm really glad that you're able to share that. So then tell me more about the LA experience and that job. Were you doing the same type of stuff in the role?
I feel that, you know, as my story continues, and I'm just going through this story with you, I sort of can see the ramp up to like where I'm at now. Because like choosing to move from Boston to LA, I know that one of the things that I could rest my anchor in is that I knew who my employer was. So as I flew on that flight to LA, to land in this city, to create life and to build a brand new community, I left Boston with a couple things. One, I knew my employer, so at least I knew who I was dealing with in terms of job, and I knew the consistency and all of that stuff. And then secondly, Boston, going back to what I said earlier, I recognized by the year three that, you know, what were the things that I really loved? And I found those communities. So once I came to LA, that's what I did. I went looking for salsa. And then from salsa, that's how I got introduced to tango, and then found an amazing tango community of people. And, you know, continuing to grow in my career with the firm, I spent another 2 years with them. At the 10-year mark, I decided to make the decision to leave, which, looking back, to me at that point in time felt like one of the hardest decisions to make, because I had been with this company now since college. And I was just like, oh my God, like I just can't envision leaving. However, what prompted that was I came out here and I was working on this client that we had been auditing for almost 20 years. And they decided that they wanted to give all of the audit work that we had been doing, this massive team of tons of people, to another competitor, Big Four. And overnight, we went from pretty much having the client to not having the client. And that then brought me back to the same question that HR asked me a few years earlier when I was in Boston, which is, where does your allegiance lie? Does it lie in the city that you live in or the industry that you work in? And once again, my answer was different. So after 2 years of living in LA, I decided that I was willing to change my industry to continue to live here.
Oh, I like that. Oh, perfect. Wow, that is, and that just goes to show too how, like, you don't have full control over your career, right? Your employer is they need to make money. And if they can't make money, you didn't exactly say that like people were going to get laid off, but I suspect there weren't, it didn't feel like everybody was going to be around there a few months later, whether it was because people chose
people
to leave on their own.
People
were moving. Yes.
Yes. So, and okay, the firm was helping. The firm was helping them. So this is where, so that question really came in handy. And I remember sharing with other people, hey, you need to think about this. So that way you can then tell the firm, hey, I'm willing to move, or I want to stay in this industry. So if you're willing to stay in the industry, so that means you might end up in another city and to be open to that. Or maybe it's that you want to take another job. So their response was, I ended up moving into banking. I had also experienced another promotion. That promotion came with a paid sabbatical, a paid 4 weeks off. Okay. And I decided that, wow, this is perfect. Why not take, I have a history of not taking vacations. So I had a lot of time. So I asked them, hey, could I take, I think it was 2 months off. So I asked if I could take 2 months off. And they looked at the calendar and they were like, yeah, you know what? Why not? It's the summertime. You can take it. And I ended up going to Italy and I traveled in Italy for 2 months, a month and a half, because I came back to LA and spent 2 weeks in LA before restarting work. Dancing tango, doing all kinds of tourist stuff. And I was paid this whole time because of the 4 weeks of from the promotion. And then vacation time that I had not used.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that crazy.
Yeah, so cool. And like, I'm sure we could have a whole long convo just about the intricacies of how different companies deal with vacation time. And that's I think, you know, instead of getting into the whole convo, it's probably just worth saying for people who are thinking about whatever job they want to look at, like really consider how your employer manages paid time off or unpaid time off, vacation, all those things. Because if you have an employer that's willing to allow those longer sort of times where, whether it's paid or unpaid, like that's, not everybody has that ability. So, and not because people aren't interested, but because the employers can't sort of manage that level of staff movement or staff time off. So
exactly.
Certainly something for people to consider while they're looking at various employers.
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the perks of, I think, working in the Big Four, is like they have these seasons, right? So then once you're out of certain, when you're no longer in that busy season period, you could negotiate for some of this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And just to clarify, because I think I know who they are, but the Big Four are PwC, Deloitte, KPMG.
Yes. And EY, Ernst & Young.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're not as big in Canada because I'm not as familiar with them. Whereas I know the buildings for all the other three in Toronto. So
Anyway,
so tell me then, when you got back and you spent this time off, did that change your outlook in any way? Like, did you feel like, now, and I'm a traveler, so this is kind of me projecting onto you maybe, but for me, like I can imagine after working so hard to then have this ability to take that much time off.
Yeah.
And having sort of done that before, all I wanted to do when I got back is do more of that. Was that, is that how you felt? Or did you just feel like recharged and ready to get back to work in this new industry?
Well, I felt recharged, you know, like I didn't, at that point in time, I didn't sort of see it as a lifestyle, as something that I could do, like long term. So, you know, I came back and I was like, okay, let's get started. And I stayed maybe at the firm for another month to 2 months. And that's when I decided, you know what, let me just check what the market would give me if I was to leave. And I did. And that's how I ended up leaving after 10 years to take another job, you know, at an investment manager.
So you were only in that banking specific area role for like a month?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's on the one hand, I hadn't thought about all this time and these 10 years working there, that because you're not in the market, there's that sort of tango with the company. Like, here's what they can offer you and here's what you're willing to accept as compensation. Right. And if you're happy with it, great. But at the same time, the market might be offering something totally different. And if you really weren't even looking, how would you even know? So a month in, was it anything about the job that you were doing that you just... You didn't find the jump as interesting?
It's funny that you asked that because being in LA, my request was entertainment, media, and technology. Like, that's the industry I wanted to transfer into. And then they were like, we can't really, it just wasn't working out. And it was like, okay, this is, since you want to stay in LA, you know, banking is sort of the industry that we do need someone in. And I said, okay. So I just sort of said, okay, this is not really my first choice, but I'm going to, let me just look and see what the market will offer. And then once I looked, I saw the market would, I got this opportunity to work for an investment manager in working on real estate, private equity real estate funds as a controller. And I said, you know what, I'll do it. Let's go. So after 10 years, I decided to quit, to leave and take the job. And I knew someone who was working there, but I want to say a month after I got hired, she gave notice and left. Mm. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, what did I do? Like, what kind of place is this? Like, if she just left. I stuck in there and I learned a lot from that experience. I remember her telling me, it takes 6 months for you to figure out what you're doing and then another 6 months to determine whether you like it or not.
People giving you great advice this whole time. Yeah. Oh, wow. You're so lucky. All these people with amazing advice for you. It seems like you said it was an amazing experience. So 6 months in, you figure out what you're doing. 6 months later, you decide you like it.
Yeah, I decided that I liked it. And what it did for me, at least, it unveiled to me what real estate could do. So I grew up in a real estate family. My father was a contractor and he built 14 apartment units. So as a child, I grew up like cleaning and helping with apartments and stuff like that. And, my parents sort of were all about make sure you go to school, get a job. They were not like, make sure you invest and like build more apartments and like stuff like that. That wasn't really the conversation they sort of had with us. So when I was in Cayman, I did buy my first place when I was working at PwC. And it was a 2-bedroom, 2.5-bath townhouse. But I bought it because I loved it. I didn't buy it because, I ran the numbers and they make sense. Mm-hmm. But I quickly realized that I needed to have considered that because once I did buy it and I tried to rent it, it broke even the first year and then it lost money every single year for 5 years.
Oh, so you kept it when you went to the States?
Yes, I kept it in Boston and I was an out of country landlord. And then I moved to LA and I still had it. And I remembered being in LA because here is where I made the decision to sell it. I want to say about a year after I moved here, I got a bill in my email for like $1,000. And this was not a property. This was a property I was floating. So I was putting money into it in order to have it. And then now I get a $1,000 bill from the AC company because the AC broke down and the tenant called the AC company. And I said, oh my goodness, this has got to go. I have to sell it. So at that point, I had to hold on to it for about 5 years. And I, called the broker, the real estate agent. And I said, hey, can you help me in selling this? She said, yeah, no problem. It took about 6 months, almost a year, but it sold. And after that sold, I was still working at PwC at the time. And I remember saying, I am totally sworn off of real estate. Not happening, not going back there. And then life has a sense of humor because I end up taking this job working for private equity real estate funds. And, 6 months in, I started to figure out what it is that I was doing. And then 6 months later, I was like, oh, this is how this is. So then I started listening to podcasts like Bigger Pockets and like going to meetups on real estate and like sort of getting educated to learn about, like really understand and learn about real estate from a perspective of an investor. And all this time I'm like still working and then I started thinking, maybe I could buy a place here in LA and like house hack. But then the properties were like $700,000 and $800,000 for like a house. And I was like, this is not going to work. And then I wanted like a duplex because I like to have my own space. So I wanted to do like, say, a duplex, and the duplexes were like $1 million. And I was like, okay, this is not working out. So I went from that to then turnkey, looking at turnkey in other cities, Alabama, Detroit. But all the time I kept remembering my first experience. So I always sort of wanted to make sure that I wasn't buying a property. Like I really understood the expenses and like really understood the rental income to make sure that this was something that was cash flowing and that I mm-hmm. would not need to be floating it.
Yeah. And it seems so, like yeah. what you, when you're talking about, first you're looking at these places in LA,
right,
where you live and work, but yes. then when you're looking at Detroit and Alabama and these other places, was that then purely a I will rent this out and, yeah. and just make money off this?
Correct.
And so you were looking at multiple options here where either you'd live in a duplex or you would rent out a house somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, it was an evolution. Like I didn't come out the gate wanting to do out of state. Mm. I started with, okay, I wanted to, you know, just invest locally, like see what I could do here. But then I quickly realized based on my desires, like what the kind of lifestyle I want to live and my choices, that it just sort of didn't really work for me. So that's how I then ended up looking out of state.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And so what's the timeline then, like year mm-hmm. or how long, where are you working at this point? Because I think we've jumped around a little bit. So
yeah.
at the time you're looking at real estate investing, are you already working at the real estate
yes.
or the yeah. Investments yeah. company?
Yeah. So I started working at the investment company in 2016. And I want to say that I started really looking at real estate seriously, probably sometime in 2017. After like maybe working there for about a year, I was yep. like, wow, like there's something here. Like I just need to figure out like how to do this properly because mm-hmm. obviously I wasn't doing it properly the first time.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like investing was really on the brain the first time.
Right.
It was like,
no,
wasn't. I want to live here. This is a nice yeah, place.
This is nice. It's yeah. pretty.
Now, when you first started thinking about investing, though, was that just as an option of like, this is just a way to bring in more money, like just a good way to invest?
Yes.
And it was 100%. Just some like passive on the side thing and you had your main job?
Right. Totally.
Now,
like when that's 100% how it started.
Okay. But I feel like there's been an evolution in that given what I think you're doing now. So
yeah.
like, tell me then how you end up from that as a,
right.
you know, on the side, I just want to bring in some rental income to what you're doing now.
Sure, sure. So I remembered a friend of mine that I met. I have a good friend of mine that I met when I was living in Boston. She said to me, you know, when she met me, she was like, you know, have you considered doing this program called Landmark? And I said, no, I've never even heard of it. And she goes, you know, I'd recommend checking it out. And she'd always say it to me like maybe yearly. And then finally, when I was in LA and I was going through a little bit of a challenging time, she said to me, you know, you should check out this program. And I said, okay. So I went online and I found that, oh, the program was like two buildings down from where I worked. And I said, wow, okay. And in LA, if something like that happens to you, it's like it's a layup.
It's
like
you
it's meant
go.
To be. Because this city is like travel zilla.
yeah, we have bad traffic in Toronto, and we have the biggest highway in North America on the north side yes. of Toronto. However, it's not great in Toronto, but I hear like nightmares far worse than I've ever experienced when it comes to traffic around LA.
Yeah, LA traffic is no joke. So if you can like literally walk to this place, which was my situation, I said, okay, I gotta go check it out. So I went, checked it out. Definitely an amazing program. Through going to that program, I met a lady and got introduced to syndications. So this was real estate investing passively into commercial real estate. So everything from apartments to retail to hotels, the whole nine yards. And I said, wow, like when I got introduced to when I met her, she didn't just off the bat share this with me. We were in this program for about 6 months. And then towards the end, one of the other girls said, hey, like we should exchange business cards. So we did. And then once we exchanged business cards, I saw that she was a real estate investor. And I was like, oh, I'm into real estate investing. And she goes, oh, really? And then, you know, I said, like, I definitely want to call you to learn more. Threw her card into my bag. Never called her. 3 months later, I was taking a little staycation, a week off, and I found her card in my bag. I was cleaning out my bag, found her card, and I said, whoa, I was supposed to call this lady. So I called her and then learned about her business. And I said, wow, like I had no idea that this was even possible. I just thought like you had to be like some kind of big investment manager, like the one I work for, in order to do this. And in order, or you need to be some institutional investor that had gazillion dollars to like invest in these things. And I just got exposed to a whole other world. And yeah, from that experience, that exposure then led me to other things because she had somewhat of like a mastermind. And through that, I got exposure to podcasting, video, blogs, the whole nine yards. And I realized that there was aspects of myself that I was probably good at, a lot of other things that I hadn't ever really been exposed to, that I didn't actually expose myself to because it just never crossed my mind.
There's a great saying that like, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that really applies there, that until you actually have the chance to sort of like rub shoulders with someone who's doing something other than what you know about.
Right.
And I'm going to imagine that at PwC and wherever you were working after that, like you're really just working with people who do the same thing you do a lot of the time. And so you don't have that kind of exposure. And I know, as like you said, you're 36, I'm 31. And so much of my friend circle is people I work with, people that know the job that I'm doing. So like there isn't always that level of diversity in terms of learning totally outside experiences.
Right.
Because when you're an adult, that's how you meet people, is through work often. And you've got to have these other sort of run-ins. And I want to just highlight really quick the value of business cards, because I think, you know, you might give out 100 business cards and maybe 99 of them get thrown out, but it costs you like $10 to make those cards. And someone 3 months later finds one in a backpack. And I've been in that same situation as you, where you find a card somebody gave you months prior, and all of a sudden it can have this like massive impact, like that 20 cent little card can have this huge impact on your life, right? So
totally.
Yeah, just crazy how that happens.
Yeah, totally crazy. So yeah, that's how I, you know, started with that program. I made my first investment, and during this time I'm still working, you know, and still building my career, not really looking to be like, oh, I'm trying to start a business or anything of that nature. Like it's just purely just investing in real estate in addition to continuing to work. And then as I continued to water these other talents and skills, and as I continued to network and meet more people, in the fall of 2019, I decided that I wanted to start a podcast. So I embarked on this, you know, to start and everything. And, you know, from doing all of that, I realized, wow, like, I feel like there's a lot of different sides of me that I'm just not utilizing. And I want to say the other side of the coin too, is once I took this job, unlike my job before, doesn't accrue vacation time. So because of my nature of just being someone who will work a lot, I didn't really take a lot of vacation. And I also was just more, because I was also very invested minded, like I just made different decisions. So some of the decisions I made was like, I want to say 3 years ago, I moved into Inglewood, which is a part of Los Angeles that is still up and coming, but has more affordable rents. So while I'm still making, you know, really good money and I could go live in the marina, I just chose to, you know, be able to save my money and move into here. And then on top of that, cut down on travel, and then spent more money in terms of education. So like really this getting into masterminds, getting into, getting around other people that were doing things that were very different from what I've been exposed to. So it really just changed my mindset and it opened up my mindset completely. So yeah, as I continued to do that, I then began to think, you know what? Why couldn't I not build a business, a syndication business myself? And once I got to that place, it was like, whoa, like, you know, it was met with a lot of internally, it was met with a lot of like doubt and uncertainty. And I sat with that, I want to say, for maybe about a year and a half of like thinking about it, continuing to build my podcast, but like also thinking about building. And then through that same woman that I met, I had an opportunity to do like a sub syndication with a few other ladies, which is creating a little syndication of our own to then invest in.
I think I'm going to get you to need to define syndication for me to make sure I understand this fully. So tell me what
syndication
really
is where you essentially provide opportunities for people to invest in projects that are fairly large, that they would not have been able to invest on their own. So they are essentially syndicators will pool funds to invest in like a real estate deal, or it can be even a business or something else altogether. So that's sort of what syndication pretty much is.
Okay, great.
So with that, I continued to work my job, continued to, you know, show up, do all the different things that I needed to do. And then after about almost a year and a half of sort of doing that, reaching the 2-year mark of continuing to build the business as well as so podcasts, building out website, thinking about email campaigning, thinking about attracting investors, talking to investors while also still working full time, you know, 12-hour days. And then COVID hit and then having that all come in-house and like sort of continuing to build it through COVID, I decided in towards the end of March to focus on building my business.
March 2021. We're talking about. Yeah. Like just happened. Yeah. Okay. So yes. Major changes coming in your life right now.
And it's been, for me, I think one of the things that kept coming up for me was that I felt like I was constantly in this tug of war with trying to work as fast as I can for my employer and then to get all of the deliverables that they need to get done to them. And then also then trying to do the things I need to do in order to build and push my business forward. And then getting to a place where you're just tired. You're just totally burnt out, like, because you're just burning on both ends of the candle. And I kept saving through this entire time. And I kept looking and thinking, running the numbers in terms of my expenses to say, okay, I know how much it takes me to live in California. If I didn't change living, do I have enough money? And then do I have enough money to also cover business expenses in terms of like running my podcast and like everything else? So once I did the numbers and got to that place where I could see, okay, yeah, you know, I'm at a good place. I've covered a lot of the basics in terms of creating the website and all this stuff for my business. I said, wow, like, I think I'm almost there. And like before leaving, I want to say, like, I knew I was going to leave eventually. I just didn't know when. And I remembered in 2019. So this is long before the decision to even leave. This is something a bit personal, but I was at a place in my dating space where I was just not meeting anyone. And like anyone that was on the same trajectory in terms of sharing the same values and wanted the same things out of life. And I decided at that time that I was going to explore the process of freezing my eggs, primarily because I heard that the company would provide support, financial support to do it. So in 2019, I went to go check it out. And when I checked it out, I chickened out because I got scared. And I was just like, you know what, I'll just wait maybe it's not going to be necessary. And then 2020 came, and 2020 has been crazy.
Yeah, dating certainly a little harder.
Yeah, it's been challenging. Like, you know, you can still meet people, but I feel like people are at a different place in their life, you know, for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah.
I decided towards the end of the year, after dating tons of different people in 2020, I said, okay, I need to sort this out. I'm just going to shut down all the dating and just get this sorted out. So I actually signed up. I reached out to the doctor in December, and I was like, hey, I want to do this. They booked me appointment to come in and everything. And essentially, I went in, and what was supposed to start in January ended up starting in December and ended up getting finished in January as opposed to finished in February. And once I finished that, I felt a very large load being left off, like taken off of my back, because I know that, you know, as a female, once you get to this point in your life, age-wise, like there's just certain realities of life that just comes with the territory. So that helped me a lot. And then once I got that sorted, I then started taking a look at my business. I knew that I was going to sign up for another coaching program. I had been eyeing these people for about a little over a year, and I'd been following them, and I really, really liked them a lot. And I decided to take the plunge. And I remember the first call I had with there's two women. And the first call I had with her, I was telling her the situation of balancing everything. And she said, have you considered giving yourself a chance, giving yourself 12 months to just focus on building your business and go all out? And I said, I'm so scared. Because I've never not had a paycheck, and I've never not had a job. And she was like, well, think about it. And, you know, I thought about it, and I had been thinking about it. So, yeah, you know, I did all the different things, like, you know, get my eyes checked, get the dentist done. And then once everything was done,
used up all those benefits.
Yeah. And then once I got to the place where it was like, okay, everything is set. This was like March-ish. I then had to make the call to my boss to say, hey, I want to resign. And that was one of the hardest calls to make. But I felt like I was mourning the loss of my identity, of like who I am. And you said earlier, you know, about being driven and career focused. And to get to this point in my career after spending almost 15 years driving this career forward, to then say, oh, you know what? I'm going to start at ground zero to build a business that I think has the ability to impact people in ways that I know is, like, I know it has the ability to impact people in massive ways, but to give myself the chance to fully focus on it. And that's how I ended up here.
Wow. And so a lot of powerful stuff going on in that speech. So for one, that's a very personal story. Thank you for sharing that, because I understand the realities that like everybody faces of, we can't just separate your career from the rest of your life. They're so intertwined, right? Like you were working, as you said, like 12 hours a day. That's literally half your day on some days. Your career is sometimes it is your life at points, right? And on top of that, working on the side to do all this other stuff to get your business now up off the ground. I also I want to provide, I think, an alternate perspective, because you said you feel like you were, or you felt maybe you don't now, but you certainly felt like you were leaving this identity behind. But I don't think you are, because what I'm hearing is you had to use all of the skills you've built up over the years in your career to actually get this business up off the ground. Like you mentioned running the numbers, and think back to what you said at the very beginning. Well, you said it partway through, where you bought the house in Cayman and you did not at all run the numbers, and it ended up being a financial loser for you. But you've taken everything you've learned in 15 years of financial management and accounting, and now you've applied that to this new real estate investment business. And so you are the same person. You've just evolved. You've taken that identity and added a new dynamic to it, I think. That's an outsider's perspective anyway.
I appreciate that. But yeah, you know, it's still raw. Like my last day will be April 15th, and we're recording this here on April 4th.
Yeah, and I think this episode's going out on April 14th, so that should be interesting.
But when you said, you know, you also said something earlier about, you know, like being brave, you know, like this has been, there's been a lot of tears.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of tears, but, you know, just really believing in yourself. And I think the other thing for me is recognizing that I'm coming full circle, in the sense of the unknown has brought a lot of uncertainty, has brought me a lot of anxiety in the past. And now it does. But being willing to sit with that unknown and to reassure myself that it's going to be okay, and we're going to play full out, and we're going to give it all that we've got. And I have like a mantra that I have, one of my mantras, which is, I could try and I could fail, or I could try and be wildly successful. So in those moments when I have doubts and when things get scary, I come back to that place. Whether I'll stay in LA or not is to be seen. I'm not attached to it. I love living here. But I will reassess as the months unfold or as the weeks unfold. But yeah, it's a time that has lots of emotions. You know, there's definitely fear. And I remembered before I made the decision, I was telling my girlfriend that I could feel the arms of fear holding me. Because like I knew what the next step was to be. But up until this point, like I had never like made such a decision. And thinking back at moving from Boston to LA, I had that anchor. You know, I knew that my employer was good. But like making this decision, especially at this time in the market when a lot of people don't have jobs and we are in a recession. But this is the time when businesses are born. This is the time. It takes people who are willing to take that risk. And they could fail, but they could also be, they could change the lives of for themselves and other people. So with that is what I just keep coming back to myself and saying, I'm just going to keep showing up and doing the best that I can. So, yeah.
Amazing. Oh, that is so good. Now, I know that brings us to where you are now, and but I can't let you go without telling me or telling the listeners, where can they find your podcast? Where can they find your company if this is something that they're interested in?
Yeah, totally. So I help busy professionals invest in real estate without being a landlord. And I do that because I know what it's like to work many, many hours, make really good money. And I have been counseled in the past to buy a home and to do all these different things. But I encourage people to think about using their money to generate streams of income. So investing it in assets that actually generate cash flow. And that's the opportunity that my business seeks to provide to people who are interested in this kind of stuff. And yes, I do have a podcast. It's called the Level Up REI. And my podcast is focused on having conversations with real estate investors. I do have conversations with passive investors every Thursday, the first Thursday of each month. So that enables my listeners to get a feel for other people who are investing passively and their experiences, and how they've dealt with the ups and downs of passively investing in all different types of real estate. And then I just bring on the show a variety of different people. So everything from operators who are operating in all the different asset classes to come on to share their experiences, their journey, their story, to get to know them. And then you can find me at lisahilton.com, and that's Hilton with a Y. So just like the Hilton Hotel, only thing with a Y. So great. Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. And I will put links to all those things in the show notes. So if you just go to my website, you can find the links to all of those things there.
Yeah.
Lisa, thank you so much. This is a roller coaster journey, sort of. I mean, it's crazy because the big, like, it was like a long crank upward and then this crazy windy journey right near the end.
It is.
And I'm hoping to see how successful, because I know it will be successful. I want to see how successful it is for you down the line. So thank you so much for sharing that today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right. So that is Lisa's career path so far. Accounting in Cayman and now real estate investing in LA. So let's talk about what we can learn from her journey. Although real estate investing for the sake of investing is relatively new in terms of her career, this is not her first experience with real estate. Back when she was living in Cayman, she had bought a place just for the sake of having a really nice place to live. And then when she left Cayman, she kept it, and it proceeded to lose money for 5 straight years. And the straw that finally broke the camel's back was a $1,000 bill for a broken air conditioner, and that was it. She was done, and she sold her place and swore off real estate. But years later, she gets a job as a controller for a private equity firm, and suddenly her eyes are open to the power of real estate and how it could change her life for the better. And I think it's important to realize that while the job was the catalyst for her to think a different way, Lisa was humble enough to accept that she didn't know much about real estate investing at that time. So she starts doing her research. She listens to podcasts. She goes to meetups to learn from the perspective of an investor. She takes courses. And then once she had enough information, she started small. She continued to learn as she went and spent 2 years building up her own syndication before she was ready to make it into a full-time career. And she had a lot of setbacks along the way that caused her to modify her plans. House hacking wasn't going to work, duplexes in LA were too expensive, all of a sudden she's looking at turnkey in Alabama or Detroit. She went through this whole evolution in her 30s to find out that she actually did have an interest in something that she had had a bad experience with earlier in life. So the lesson that I think we can take from that is that you shouldn't just abandon an idea for the rest of your life because things didn't work out the first time. I think of it in the same way that our taste changes over time. And 5 years ago, maybe you didn't like a certain food, but if you try it again now, maybe you will. So when it comes to something that you suddenly have an interest in terms of your career that you thought in the past was never going to be in your future, start slow. Dip your toe in the water, see how it feels. And if the water's the right temperature, slowly work your way in. That's what Lisa did, and now she has an entirely new career because of it. I also think that Lisa has shown us that investing not only in property but in yourself can pay off. It just takes time. Lisa told us she spent 2 years building up her business, but she also said that in that time she committed resources to training and opportunities to get around more business people to help her network and grow her knowledge of the industry. And then in the fall of 2019, she decided she wanted to start a podcast. And while we didn't talk about it, I would guarantee that the conversations she's had on her podcast have contributed significantly to what she's learned about investing since she started. So I hear that, and it's clear that Lisa had a plan. She had a plan to obtain the skills, the contacts, and to get the branding presence required to ensure that she could one day have a successful business. And she had to put in a lot of hours on top of her regular job to get to that point, and she was probably making no money at first. But now, on April 15th, 2001, one day after this episode is released, she will be totally independent and working for herself. And the lesson from that is to be patient. Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither was Lisa's business. So make a plan and stick to it, and eventually you will see results. I want to add to that, though, that patience does not have to be boring. I don't know about you, but Lisa sounds pretty fired up when she's talking about real estate investing, when she's talking about how it has the power to change people's lives. I mean, I'm getting fired up just thinking about her enthusiasm for the career that she's built for herself. And I wonder if this is what my wife feels like when I talk about podcasting, although I doubt it. Anyways, it's probably time to calm down and wrap this thing up. So those are a couple of the things that I think we can learn from Lisa. But I am sure there are more lessons that you pulled out of this interview. And if you did, let me know about them through the contact page on careercrossroadspodcast.com. I'd love to hear what others are getting out of these interviews. If you know someone who'd be interested in Lisa's career path, please share this episode with them. And if you want to hear more interviews like this, go to careercrossroadspodcast.com or find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast player out there. If you like what you hear, please leave the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Or you can even leave a review directly on my website. While you're there, I hope you will subscribe to my newsletter, which goes out every Wednesday and includes things like recent career articles I'd recommend, and of course, the link to the newest episode of the podcast. Episodes like next week's interview with Zach, who studied politics, then became a paramedic in Canada, but now lives in Belgium working on European healthcare policy.